All right, so picture this. You're finally living that dream, beachfront property, got the blueprints, ready to go build that perfect escape.
Sounds idyllic.
It does, right? But then the Coastal Commission hits you with a curveball. They're like, yeah, you can build, but only if you give us a chunk of your land for like public access.
It's a bit of a catch.
It's a huge catch. And that's exactly the kind of crazy scenario that's at the heart of this case, Nolan v. California Coastal Commission.
Absolutely. It's a landmark case, and it still has lawyers and property owners, kind of scratching their heads.
Yeah, well, today we're going to take a deep dive into it. This one's especially for those of you who are fascinated by real estate law.
Or just the idea of owning property someday.
Exactly, because this could happen to you.
Absolutely. And it raises a question that I think we wrestle with constantly, which is, where is that line between, what's reasonable regulation and when is the government essentially taking your property?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, this isn't just some California thing.
Right. The precedent set here affects 29 states.
Wow, so before we really get into the legal weeds of it all, can you set the scene for us? Who were these Nolans and what were they up against?
Sure. So the Nolans were this California couple. They owned a beachfront lot and they had a small bungalow on it, and they wanted to replace it with a bigger three-bedroom house.
Makes sense. It's their property, right?
Seems pretty standard,
Yeah,
right?
totally.
But here's where it gets interesting. The California Coastal Commission, which oversees development along the coast, as they said, okay, you can have your permit, but you have to grant a public easement across your property.
So wait, they had to give up part of their land just to rebuild their own house?
Basically, a pathway so people could walk along the beach.
That seems like a pretty steep price to pay.
That's exactly what the Nolans thought. The commission argued that this easement was necessary to preserve the public views of the beach and to make sure people can actually get to it.
So was their concern like a bunch of houses would block the view?
Their concern was that all these houses lining the coast would create like a psychological barrier to public access.
Interesting. Even if people technically had the right to walk along the shore.
Exactly.
Okay, so the commission was aiming for the big picture here, right? They want to make sure the public can still access the beach. But did they really have the right to demand that from individual property owners?
Well, that's a great question.
It seemed like a classic clash between like public good and private property rights.
Absolutely. And that's where the Fifth Amendment comes in.
Okay.
The Nolans argued that this condition on their permit, this easement, was a violation of their right to just compensation for property taken for public use.
So they're basically saying if you want our land for a public walkway, you got to pay for it.
Exactly.
Makes sense to me. You can't just force people to give up their property without fair compensation.
Well, the Supreme Court seemed to agree.
Really? So this beach house dispute ended up in the Supreme Court.
It did. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court sided with the Nolans.
Wow. So what was their reasoning? Did they just think the commission's demands were unfair, or was there like a deeper legal principle at play here?
It was a pretty big deal because the court went beyond just the facts of this particular case, and they used it as an opportunity to establish a key legal test that's still used today. It's called the essential nexus test.
Essential nexus test. It sounds very law schooly. What does that mean in plain English?
Essentially, it means that any condition that's attached to a permit has to have a direct connection to the harm that's caused by the proposed development. It can't just be random or arbitrary.
Okay, so give me an example. If there's a new building going up and it's going to block a bunch of scenic views, could the state regulate the building's height to prevent that?
Exactly. That would be a legitimate use of regulatory power because it's directly addressing the problem created by the development. But demanding a public walkway because someone is rebuilding their house, the court said, no, that's not a logical connection.
So it's about making sure regulations are actually solving the problems they're supposed to be solving, not just being used as a way to grab land or make unrelated demands.
Precisely, Justice Scalia, who wrote the majority opinion, made this point very clear. He said that the right to exclude others is one of the most essential sticks in the bundle of property rights.
The bundle of rights, I like that. And it really highlights what's so interesting about this whole case. It's not just about beachfront property. It gets to the heart of what it means to own property, period.
It does.
And where the government's power to regulate for the collective good bums up against those individual rights.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. And of course, a landmark case like this, especially with a 5-4 decision, it sparked a lot of debate. Not everyone agreed with the majority.
Oh, really?
Justice Brennan, for instance, he wrote a dissenting opinion and argued that the essential nexus test was too rigid.
Too rigid?
Yeah, and that it could actually hinder creative solutions to complex land use issues.
So he was worried that focusing too narrowly on individual property rights might make it harder to address those bigger societal concerns, like ensuring public access to these natural resources.
Exactly. He felt that courts should give more leeway to regulators who are trying to address what he called the cumulative impacts of development.
So, like, if everyone builds a bigger house, it's a problem. But if just one person does, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, he pointed out, for instance, that if everyone along a coastline built bigger houses, it could collectively restrict public access, even if no single house was solely responsible for the problem.
That's a really interesting point. It brings up the question of how do we balance those individual property rights with the potential for collective harm? Where do we draw the line? It feels like this debate goes way beyond just this one case.
It absolutely does. And it's a debate that is very much alive today, especially as we grapple with issues like climate change and its impact on coastal development.
This is already so much more complex than I initially imagined. I'm hooked. Let's dive into those broader implications next.
This case wasn't just about, you know, a couple and their dream home. It really kind of shook up the world of property law.
Oh, yeah.
It really opened up this whole can of worms when it comes to something called regulatory takings.
Regulatory takings? What is that? Is that like when the government just comes in and takes your property?
Not exactly. It's a little more nuanced than that. A regulatory taking is when the government doesn't actually physically seize your land.
Okay.
But they put so many restrictions on it that it essentially loses its value, or, you know, you can't really use it the way you intended to.
Ah, so it's like death by a thousand cuts for property owners.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The government ended up taking the land outright, but all their rules and regulations make it practically useless.
Exactly. And Nolan v. California Coastal Commission really set a precedent for, you know, how to push back against that kind of overreach.
So it's a tool that property owners can use to protect themselves.
Exactly. Remember that whole essential nexus test?
Yeah, the idea that any condition attached to a permit needs to be, like, directly related to the problem the regulation is trying to fix.
Right. Nolan made it crystal clear that the government can't just slap on random conditions, you know, under the guise of regulation. There has to be a clear and justifiable connection.
So it's like a shield for property owners, protecting them from the government imposing unreasonable demands or just trying to grab land without proper compensation.
Precisely. And the impact of Nolan went far beyond this one case.
Really?
It's influenced legal decisions and land use policies in at least 29 states.
Wow. So it really did send shockwaves through the legal system. But I'm guessing it didn't settle all the arguments around property rights and government regulation, did it?
You guess right, Nolan was a landmark case, but it definitely wasn't the final word.
Okay.
In fact, it sparked even more legal challenges and further refined this whole idea of takings jurisprudence.
There's more. Oh, really? So what came next? Did another case come along and kind of build on the foundation laid by Nolan?
Exactly. Fast forward a few years to 1994, and we have another Supreme Court showdown.
Ooh, another Supreme Court case.
Dolan v. City of Tigard.
Okay, Dolan v. City of Tigard. What was at stake this time?
So in Dolan, the owner of a plumbing and electrical supply store wanted to expand her business.
Okay, sounds reasonable.
And the city said, fine, you can have your permit, but you have to dedicate some of your property for a public greenway along a creek and also build a bike path.
Hang on a second. This sounds kind of familiar. It's like Nolan, but instead of beachfront access, we're talking greenways and bike paths.
You're picking up the pattern. The city argued that these conditions were necessary to deal with the increased traffic and stormwater runoff that the bigger store might create.
Okay, so they were at least trying to connect the conditions to the development's impact, just like the essential nexus test requires. So what was the issue then? Why did it end up at the Supreme Court?
Well, even though the city was seemingly following that essential nexus idea, the Supreme Court still thought they went too far.
Interesting.
They added another layer to the takings analysis with this concept of rough proportionality.
Rough proportionality. You've lost me. It sounds like something you'd find in a baking recipe.
Think of it this way. It means there has to be a reasonable relationship between the condition imposed on the property owner and the impact of their development. So it's not enough for the condition to just be related to the impact. It has to be in proportion to the size and scope of that impact.
Oh, so you can't demand a massive public park in exchange for a permit to build a tiny tool shed. The solution needs to fit the problem.
Exactly. Hoare basically said that in Dolan, the city hadn't really shown that the required greenway and bike path were really proportional to the burden the store expansion would put on traffic and drainage.
So they were basically saying, look, we get it, you have concerns, but the solution you're proposing is way too heavy-handed for the problem at hand.
Exactly. The Dolan case reinforced this principle that regulations, even with good intentions, you know, have to be carefully scrutinized to make sure they're not stepping over the line into these unconstitutional takings.
So they're building on this idea from Nolan.
Right.
It's amazing how these cases kind of build on each other, adding these new layers of complexity to how we understand property rights and the government's power to regulate. It's like building a legal fortress brick by brick.
And what's so fascinating is how this all connects to these modern challenges we're facing, like climate change, adaptation, and resilience.
Whoa, hold on. How do these property rights cases from decades ago tie into something as massive as climate change? I'm intrigued. All right, so we've got these landmark cases about property rights and regulations, but how on earth do they connect to something as huge as climate change?
Well, think about it. You know, the challenges that coastal communities are facing right now,
right?
Sea levels, rising storms getting more intense, and, you know, we're having to make some tough choices about how to adapt and protect ourselves.
Yeah, and that's where things get tricky.
Right.
Because those actions could really impact coastal property owners. I mean, some might see their land literally disappear because of erosion.
Absolutely.
While others might face restrictions on what they can build or how they can use their property.
Exactly. And that's, you know, where the legacy of Nolan and Dolan comes in. Governments have to walk this tightrope between, you know, ensuring public safety and respecting those individual property rights.
Right, because they can't just come in and impose sweeping regulations without considering the potential for takings claims.
Exactly.
So give me an example. Like, let's say a town decides to build a massive seawall to protect the community.
Okay.
But that seawall ends up blocking a homeowner's beautiful ocean view. Could that homeowner argue that they've been subjected to a regulatory taking?
It's definitely a possibility, and it's a question that courts are dealing with, you know, more and more these days.
That makes sense.
The essential nexus and rough proportionality tests from Nolan and Dolan, you know, those give us a framework for evaluating these kinds of situations.
So it all comes back to those cases.
It does. Courts have to really weigh the public interest in protecting communities from the impacts of climate change.
Right.
Against the potential harm to individual property owners.
Wow, that's a tough job.
It is.
So are there any, like, real life examples of how these cases have actually played out in, you know, the context of climate change adaptation?
Absolutely. There have been several cases where property owners have challenged climate-related regulations.
Really?
For example, there was a case where a group of beachfront property owners in North Carolina, they sued the state over a law that basically restricted their ability to rebuild homes that had been damaged by erosion.
Wow.
And they argued that this law was essentially a taking of their property without just compensation.
That sounds like a head-on collision between those private property rights and the need to adapt to a changing coastline. So what happened? Did the court side with the property owners or the state?
That case actually went all the way to the North Carolina Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
And in the end, they ruled in favor of the state. They recognized the critical importance of, you know, protecting those coastal resources.
Right.
And they determined that the law was a legitimate exercise of the state's power to regulate land use for the public good.
So it's a win for the environment?
You could say that.
But it's still a really complex issue.
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like this area of law is very much in flux as we grapple with these growing challenges of climate change.
You're absolutely right. Nolan and Dolan provided some important legal tools, you know, for navigating this intersection of property rights and government regulation.
Right.
But they certainly didn't anticipate the specific challenges of climate change.
Yeah, how could they?
As we adapt to this rapidly changing world, we can expect even more legal battles over how to balance those individual rights with, you know, that collective need for resilience.
It's a stark reminder that law isn't just a static set of rules in some dusty old book.
It's not.
It's a dynamic process that constantly evolves to meet the changing needs of society.
Well said. And today's deep dive has really highlighted how those changes can play out in some really unexpected ways.
It has.
Who would have thought that a case about a seemingly simple beach house in California,
right,
would have such far-reaching implications for how we address climate change, you know, decades later?
It's incredible. It really underscores how these seemingly isolated legal disputes can often touch upon fundamental questions that affect us all.
It does. What's crucial, I think, is that we continue to search for, you know, those creative solutions that respect individual rights while also giving governments the tools they need to address those broader societal needs.
That's the balance we need to find.
It is. It's a complex challenge, but, you know, engaging in thoughtful dialogue,
yeah,
and considering a wide range of perspectives, you know, those are essential as we move forward.
Well, I think we've given our listeners a lot to ponder today.
I think so.
We've explored the backstory of Nolan v. California Coastal Commission, unpacked the key legal principles involved.
We did.
And even connected it to the urgent issue of climate change adaptation. What a journey.
It's been a fascinating exploration, for sure. And it's clear that this case, though, decided years ago, still has a lot to teach us about, you know, navigating this ever-evolving landscape of property rights and regulation in a world facing, you know, unprecedented challenges.
Absolutely. And all our listeners out there, we encourage you to dig deeper into these issues.
Yeah.
And consider how they might play out in your own communities. Think about that balance between individual rights and the collective good, especially as we face the uncertainties of a changing climate.
A lot to think about.
And most importantly, never stop asking questions.